This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to our weekly series on inequality in the Baltimore region, The Lines Between Us. Previously in the series, we've examined the lack of diversity at nonprofits in the region, particularly in executive leadership roles. Many of these nonprofits are working to address social problems concentrated in poor neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are often populated primarily by people of color. Today, we'll explore the racial dynamics that come into play when white-led organizations work with these communities. In a few minutes, we'll talk to Angelo Solera, Executive Director of Latino Providers Network, regarding his concerns about organizations who want to provide services or do research in the Latino community. Also joining that conversation will be Diane Lede and Adar Ayira of Baltimore Racial Justice Action, an organization with separate affinity groups for white anti-racism activists and activists of color. First, an essay from Davon Love of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, a for-profit youth-led think tank and political action committee in Baltimore. When a coalition of youth advocates rallied last year to stop the construction of a youth jail in Baltimore, a jail for juvenile offenders charged as adults, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle criticized the coalition for ignoring long-standing, black-led grassroots activism against the jail. To Davon Love, the situation was typical of the dynamics he sees at play in our region.
I'm a product of the Baltimore Urban Debate League. And during my time there, I came in contact with many liberal whites wanting to help. Liberal whites have many causes. Animal rights, abortion, you name it. In Baltimore, you often see them working with the disadvantaged and the underserved, condemning black poverty. You're less likely to see white liberals condemning systemic racism. Last year, well-funded, white-led advocacy groups joined black grassroots organizations to fight the youth jail. "We share the same goal," they told people like me. I said, "No, our goals are not the same." My goal is to build institutions that can properly clothe, feed, house, and educate the children of people under the vicious assault by white supremacy and racism. Should men run most organizations serving women? Well, in the youth advocacy world, you see a lot of black children and a lot of white adults. When whites lead the organizations getting most of the funding and framing the conversation, they are empowering themselves to determine a movement that will largely affect black people. And they're squelching out the authentic voice of those most affected by these issues. I have skin in the game. I've been harassed by the police. I live in the kind of neighborhood they would say they want to fix. My cause is making sure that black people can determine the institutions that govern our lives. Here's the problem with causes. They often reduce people to projects. Many nonprofits serving the underprivileged see us as their projects to be fixed. People do projects because they want to accomplish something. That accomplishment triggers a sense of gratification, maybe even existential catharsis. Many whites are trying to do their projects. I am trying to survive white racism. People often boil racism down to individual bigotry. I'm talking about structural racism, the social, political, and economic power that whites have to control the destiny of people of color. For example, black and white people use drugs at the same rate, but black people are more likely to be incarcerated for drugs. Sometimes the most adamant defenders of racism are black people who have internalized it. Some black people connected to nonprofits and white liberal circles assure me that their white friends would never do anything racist. They may say, "John doesn't have a racist bone in his body." Black people can become blind to racism in an institution if they fear jeopardizing friendships with white colleagues. Whites who are aware of the depth of racism in America sometimes see their work as a way to satisfy their guilt. That's easier than acknowledging their privilege. A cause can fulfill a personal psychological need, and in Baltimore, there's now an entire industry around people satisfying that need. Whites who are genuinely interested in helping have to be clear. Psychological needs must be pushed aside. True commitment is working with and assisting black folks to speak for ourselves and lead the institutions that control our lives. Otherwise, you might be profiteering from our misery. If white people want to help, I suggest they support black leadership in our institutions and help their white peers understand their role. But if you are unwilling to submit to black leadership to address our issues, then you are in my way.
Devon Love is Director of Research and Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cass. This is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning. And joining me now to react to Devon's essay are two members of anti-racism organization Baltimore Racial Justice Action. Adar Ayira is part of their affinity group for people of color. Welcome back to the show, Adar.
Thank you so much.
And we should disclose that Adar works at Associated Black Charities, which is a funder of this series, The Lines Between Us. Diane Lede is part of Baltimore Racial Justice Action's affinity group for white anti-racism activists. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you.
And Angelo Solera is executive director of Latino Providers Network here in Baltimore. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Reactions?
First of all, I would just say bouquets, bouquets, bouquets to Devon Love for such a thoughtful and, in my view, accurate summation of some of the issues of today. I would also say how disheartening that we are still struggling with some of the same issues that were on the table in 1963, when some of these same types of conversations about the role of white liberals and moderates in the movement and whether they were leading the movement or operating in partnership with black leadership was on the table.
For us, speaking in reference to the Latino community, I think that the conversation in this piece was about black and white, but we feel that we belong into the conversation because we can relate to what Devon was saying in a sense that historically in our community, people from outside the community has come to the community to provide specific services or to do things for the community. And what we are trying to do within the Latino Providers Network is to take ownership of our community and to be part of the decision-making process at all levels instead of just having people come into our community thinking that they know what's best for us, but actually have people from the community making those decisions.
Angelo, explain a little more about what Latino Providers Network does, how it works.
We are a membership organization, so organizations have to pay for membership. The benefits are that we are able to connect the organizations and the programs with the community. We are able to connect people who are doing the same thing. So we become, in a way, like the gatekeepers of the community, if you want to put it that way, where we are able to bring people together to try and to create a sense of what works in the community so can people benefit from those services.
So you've thought a lot about these same issues that Devon is raising in this essay. Diane Lede, what was your...
Well, as a white person, it always hurts to hear criticism of white people, but also as a white person, I like to focus my comments on us white people, and kind of to start with how liberating it is to look inside yourself and learn what you do and don't know about race in the U.S., because we may think we know, but there's a lot that we don't know. I think most of us mean well, but really our intentions are immaterial if we're creating or being barriers to what a community is trying to accomplish. We have a tendency to enter situations with assumptions from a white perspective and assume that that's a universal and correct perspective. We're not very good at listening. And so I'm kind of torn right now because part of the problem is we want to dominate the conversation.
This is The Lines Between Us on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Angelo Solera of Latino Providers Network and Adar Ayira and Diane Lede of Baltimore Racial Justice Action. We're talking about where whites fit in efforts for racial and social justice in our region. Tell me how you envision the practical effect of what Devon Love was laying out. What does that look like?
Well, one way that it could look like is this. Devon spoke about projects being funded. When you have project funding, which many foundations and other corporate entities do, you're talking about a beginning, a middle, and an end. But yet the issues that affect our communities are systemic and structural. They are long-term. And giving money for a project for a year does not resolve those issues. So
one way collaboration would look. One difference in funding would be that we realize that we are in this for the long haul, that it's not just enough to do direct service projects, because direct service projects, although they are needed, you're going to be having the same issues 20, 30, 40, 50 years out. When we're talking systemic and structural change, we're talking about changing the root of the issue. By the time you get to direct service, you are seeing the outcome of an issue.
Perhaps I'm hung up on where Devon began his critique, but he was talking about the jail project. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that was a decision, a state decision, a state that is 30% black. The bulk of the state leadership is probably going to be white. And Devon is saying white folks should not be making these decisions that affect primarily black community.
I think it's an issue that happens in communities of color, lack of leadership. And what we are trying to do within the Latino Providers Network is create leadership, create an organization, an institution that can actually speak for the community, not having others speaking for the community. So I think maybe he's talking about that, the fact that because there is no leadership within the African-American community, there are others who are making the decisions.
And I would just disagree with that, or I would restate it differently. I would say that there is leadership that is not recognized.
Yeah.
And the same, I'm going to go out on a limb for the Latino community, that there are people in those communities doing the work on the front lines who are not listened to, who are not funded, who are not acknowledged as the leaders they are because they do not hold the titles that we're used to, the education that we are used to. They don't have those markers that we look to indicate that they are leaders.
Totally agree, yes.
It strikes me that the kind of change Devon Love's calling for is, of course, going to take a long time because you're talking about a real shift in power.
Correct.
How do you envision that unfolding?
I'm not a political scientist, so I haven't really thought of this in terms of, you know, Annapolis, you know, or Baltimore City Council. To me, Devon was addressing the nonprofit complex and how white-led organizations with our good intentions, you know, are going out and trying to, quote, save, unquote, black or Latino communities, and that, you know, before we look to changing politics, maybe we need to look to change the way nonprofits, you know, are operating in Baltimore.
Part of what we're trying to do within the Latino Providers Network is to be at the table, to be part of the decision-making process, whether we're talking about a political process or we're talking about nonprofits, or we're talking about who represents the community or who speaks for the community. I think that having representation for us, for the Latino community, is important because historically Baltimore City has been black and white. And we're trying to change the face of the Baltimore Latino community because we are not just a new immigrant community. We are not just undocumented aliens or illegal aliens. We are a thriving community. We are a community that is growing, that is making a contribution to the city, to the state, and to the nation. And we want to change the face of the Latino community and how people perceive us. So I think being part of the decision-making process and having people who represent us at different levels, including, you know, nonprofits, I think it makes a difference.
And when we talk about power, there are many different types of power. We, before we were on air, had discussions about the importance of relationship, the importance of coalition building, and again, the importance of looking at the systemic and the structural. So usually when we talk about power, we only talk about it in terms of political power, or we talk about it in terms of economic power. That is how we define leadership, based on who has one, the other, or both. But there is another power that has kept our Baltimore community going and many other communities across the country going, and that is the power of the people to be involved in their own choices, the power of the agency that they have, and the power of their resistance against a system that too often truncates their chances and their opportunities and their access. And it is those voices and that type of power that we are saying, and that I think Devon is saying, needs to be recognized and needs to be pulled into the conversations and at the tables so that we can get better outcomes for our communities.
But I think we have to develop that power within our own communities. We have to educate people to be grant writers and to be people who can actually go and do the things that others are doing for our community. And that's something that we're trying to do within our community, because we understand the value and the power of people. But if people are not educated, people are not trained, people are not focused on what we are trying to do, people alone is not going to give you that power.
And I think that that's another part of the conversation, because that is about investment. And that is about what structures, what systems, what organizations are investing in what communities. And this is another part of the essay, that you have different organizations, nonprofit organizations, with people who have been invested in, who understand how to write grants, and not only how to write grants, but who have relationships with those foundations. And then you have people who are on the front lines doing the work who may not be as skilled in that, who may not have those relationships. So part of the shift can be funding entities making investments. Because if the people are already doing the work and they have been doing the work, then why not put money into those people and organizations who have been doing the work, who do have outcomes on which they can speak?
And I want to say, I think it's a very fundamental shift for people in power or positions of power in nonprofit organizations to let go of control of the money. You know, we live in a society where, you know, I earn the money, it's my money to spend, I'll spend it my way. And as a foundation, that doesn't really work, I don't think, for communities. It's like, again, assuming that we know how the community needs to be, quote, fixed, unquote, assuming that there's some kind of pathology about the community that we can step in and cure, when really what we need to be doing is letting the community have the money and trusting that the community is full of adults who know how the money needs to be spent.
I would definitely say trust but verify. And I...
Yes, you have to.
I totally believe in benchmarks. I totally believe in outcomes. But I will say this, and this is where I agree with that. I do agree that there needs to be a shift in mindset, because a lot of times the benchmarks and the outcomes with which we look with any foundation are very linear. They're very straightforward and they're very time restrictive. You need to feed 100,000 people in 18 months or we're going to take the money. And we know that the challenges are not linear and progress is not linear. So that is where the shift in mindset for me becomes critical, because we cannot achieve structural change on project funding.
Let me ask this. If people hear Devon's essay, not with your open, accepting heart, but if white people hear, fine, there's problems in the white community, there's economic injustice in the white community, there's discrimination against women, I'll work on those problems. Does that help the struggle of people of color?
I think the problem is people who want to help, sometimes they do it for their wrong reasons instead of really doing it to make a difference in people's lives. So when the outcome is not what they think, maybe they don't want to do it. I think when we talk about making a difference in people's lives, we have to take a look at the entire community and what are the issues that that community is going through, not what I think I would want to work on or what is my commitment. What we're trying to do in the Latino community is we asking people to make a contribution. We charge for membership because we believe that if you invest it in the community, you are going to be more willing to really work in the community and trying to get your monies back, if you want to put it that way, versus you just coming in because you want to help. Too many times people come to communities because they want to help, but they don't really understand the whole concept or what it's going to take to resolve that issue and what you were talking about.
But I'm still trying to understand. There will be white folks listening to this who will say, fine, if Devon Love feels that I'm in his way, there are other places where I can contribute. Mm-hmm.
If that is what they take from this, then I think that they have missed the point. Because what Devon is talking about is a change in paradigm, that this is not project-based. He's talking about structural issues. What Devon is saying, from what I get out of this, is that this is not about individual projects that are disconnected from the overall system of equity and inequity.
And I would want to add to any white person who is listening to this is that we are good people. We know we're good people. We do good things, but we don't understand often how we are colluding with the system that Adar and Angelo have been talking about. And that rather than, you know, take my football and go home, I would rather that white people be willing to look in the mirror, and if they need help doing that, there are organizations like ours that will help them. It can be an uncomfortable process, but it's ultimately liberating to understand and to stop colluding with a system that is hurting people's life chances.
I would even ask people, why do you want to help? Do you want to help these communities because you think that you have it better and you need to help them? Or do you really want to help them because you see the bigger picture and you understand the changes need to be happening?
And again, the bottom line, I believe from what Devon was saying, you don't have to lead just because you are white, that you can work in partnership, full partnership, and collaboration to create systemic change, and that is what this is about.
Also, I would like to add that our work continues whether or not we get the money, whether the money runs out, whether the project is over. Our work in our communities continues.
Our communities continue.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Angelo Solera is Executive Director of Latino Providers Network in Baltimore. Adar Ayira and Diane Lede are with Baltimore Racial Justice Action. Want to share your thoughts about today's program? Go to linesbetweenus.org and choose your stories. Also, at our website, we'll have information about upcoming meetings and workshops led by some of today's guests, including one tonight. At the 2640 space in Charles Village, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle will host a debate called Black Students Led by White Adults, Liberation or Subordination? That and more at linesbetweenus.org. I'm Sheila Cast. That's it for Lines Between Us today. On Maryland Morning, after a break, a new novel weaves a fresh conspiracy around the John F. Kennedy assassination. Stay with us on 88.1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.